This is the third installment of my attempt to explain the sun. Now, I've previously introduced the previous sections by talking about our general knowledge and how I'm going to advance it. And in general, I've told you about the scale of the sun being 100 times the width of the Earth, 400 times the width of the moon, and 400 times further away. And those two facts together explain the fact how the sun is completely blocked out by the moon when the moon passes in front of it, and we can get a total eclipse at this point in time. Also discuss about how we orbit the sun, and that orbit forms the gyroscope, which keeps us in a true direction as we go through the galaxy, and therefore, because we're stabilized in this orbit, the galaxy appears to swing about us. I also explain the actual components of the sun as we move outwards. Now, what I think I should do is a sort of apologize for being interrupted each time by family life. I make an apology to you, but I make no apology in my own life. I've got to look after children, run after them, and or open up the door when my wife comes home from a novel reading and stuff like that. But I suppose the other point before I get into the introduction, finish the introduction, is to say that there is some really... The idea behind this explanation idea is that I explain things which are quite incredible, quite things that we miss in school explanations or everyday explanations. And the thing that I'm trying to get to is the fact that the sun is so precise, such a solid circular drop. It's not a big fuzzy cloud as a red giant. It would be a big fuzzy puff of a red cloud there, and that we are orbiting in the sun's atmosphere, so to speak. So it starts on the sun, it stops very suddenly and becomes a very thin space, and the gas itself is not reaching out. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect I want to explain is the color of stars. Now, everyone in society believes stars are just the uniform sort of whitish colour, and I must admit, when I'm in the cinema seeing the Star Wars movie at the start, I go, my jaw drops, and I, you know, my heart is in my mouth for a moment, because I look and I see the sky that they present there of deep space, and it's really nothing like real space. All the stars are not coloured the colours of the rainbow, but the colours of basically an iron that you put in the fire. So some will be red, some will be white, and you're looking at white hot or blue hot. And so that range of colour, which you don't see in the Star Wars movie, and it's the range of colour that I want to attempt to explain. With that being said, this is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things of a scientific nature. I think that might be the better way to talk about. And we're going to start to dive straight a speed tour through the standard sections of the sun. I've spent a bit of time on that, and that's the radiative zone, the inner 80% of the sun. And that's that is, for all intents and purposes, solid. It has the fusion happening right in the central 20% of the sun, which is the core. So this is helium is being converted from hydrogen. So hydrogen has been stuck together bit by bit into helium and releasing heaps of energy, and it takes a million years for it to conduct out of the radiative zone. So it doesn't travel at the speed of sound. Radiation, you do think of travelling at the speed of, not sound, but light, and this is not the case. It does travel with the speed of light within a solid. So if you get, say, a solid piece of metal in a fire, heat it up, and you get a tool and cleave it in two, you'll see it's red inside. So too is the sun. The sun is completely hot inside. It's a hot solid inside. So this solid, and it is effectively solid, i.e. the parts in there do not move about the place. This solid sphere rotates within the convective zone, the next shell layer out, a convection zone, and creates a shear force as it spins against the atmosphere, the solar atmosphere, the inner convective zone. So convective zone is like a hot boiling water, with the water going from the hot rising up, expanding and rising up. And as it does so and shears, it creates a tremendous magnetic field. And this starts to have a very complicated effect of magnetic field lines. People talk about magnetic field lines, but it is the interaction of field lines and plasma. And the magnetic field lines contract as there is a current. If you have two wires carrying current and you suddenly pulse current through these two wires will slam together. And so although people talk about magnetic field lines, these are really plasma tubes going up and down in the convective layer. And these roll around, become progressively more twisted over an 11-year period, and detach from the tachosphere. It sounds like some sort of Mexican thing. I don't know how you pronounce it. I've only ever read it. Sorry, guys. It's something from me just reading things and putting them things abstract in my mind. This is the first time I've actually tried to articulate it. But every 11 years, this magnetic field gets tangled and reorients. So every 11 years, the north, if you had a north imaginary letter N floating above the sun, and imaginary letter south, every 11 years it would become a bit waffly. You get a few N's and S's going around the place, and then it reorients itself such there is where there was north, there is south. It flips every 11 years. And now it also flips in the Earth. Our magnetic field pole also flips, but our dynamo effect is much more slow, a much lower electric field, much greater viscosity, and there's a lot more factors in it. And so we don't have the rhythmic movement every 11 years. And during this time, every year, the sun's activity increases, the solar winds increase, the activity increases, and some of the satellites actually have shields that they pull up against themselves if a solar wind is coming towards them, a solar burst is coming towards them, and they protect themselves from this onslaught of solar winds. And of course, in the space station, there's all concerns about it. Now, we'll talk about the Earth, of course, and the magnetic shielding that the Earth provides. But let's get back to the convection zone. The convection zone is, again, hot, molten, well, basically hot molten gas. It's a liquid, it's a plasma liquid. Plasma dynamics just talks about, I suppose, liquid equations for the plasma, but the light still can't travel very far inside it. So radiation is still quite slow. So radiation, where it actually suddenly can start to travel a distance to the surface, the free surface of the sun, that is called the photosphere. And that's the sun that we see, the sun that we feel. That's where all the radiation comes out. So the temperature is always dropping from 15 million degrees successively in shell layers right down to around 6,000 or 5,000 degrees. Now, this photosphere is when the light comes to the end of that. It's the pressure or the density of the sun suddenly drops away. And so the light, when it's coming here, expects to hit some more gas. It doesn't. It actually hits free space and travels forever and forever. And this photosphere and this peeling away the sun is to do with the something called Alphaean waves. So Alphaean waves is sort of a generation of radiation waves. So microwave or radio radiation from the sun, and this radiation heats up the plasma, heats up the atmosphere. So the atmosphere of the sun suddenly begins to increase in temperature to 10,000, 30,000 degrees from 6,000 degrees up to 10 times that, or 100 times that amount, due to the magnetic field lines in the chromosphere, in the convection zone, I suppose, buzzing, if you'd like to think of it. It's actually producing a vibration back and forth, and that vibration, electrical vibration, we call that radio waves, radio heating. And this couples with the plasma and heats it up. Very similar to the heating up of... I suppose it's a little bit similar to a microwave oven. So there is plasma heating. It's actually a plasma heating effect. So what happens is that this radiation, this magnetic field, transports energy out of the sun to heat up the atmosphere, the above atmosphere called the chromosphere. Let's talk a little bit about the chromosphere. So this is a very tenuous gas. It is definitely more a gas. It's better to think of it as a gas lamp. And it is the consistency of the light that you see in a plasma ball. That might be one example. A plasma ball is a beautiful example of it. Or it's similar to the inside of a neon sign or a neon tube. It's a glowing gas. It's heated up. And in terms of your everyday experience, the photosphere is, when you light a match, the photosphere is the yellow part of the flame, the top part, and the bottom part, which you tend to see as the blue part, which is line emissions, is the chromosphere. Chromosphere means color sphere. And the important thing is that you can actually get a special filter on your telescopes if you want to look at it, and it's called... a hydrogen line filter. So if you see a hydrogen lamp at university or at school, you look at it through a spectrometer and you'll see these series of lines. I think there's a red line, the principal line between the second and third shell quantum principal quantum number levels, and that's a red line. And so that's 3 to 2, 4 to 2 is blue and more. So this is a very thin line. You can actually get a filter which blocks out all light either side of it. And so this is an emission line, and you'll suddenly see this another shell, which is normally invisible to the naked eye on the outside. And this is very similar to the way that children draw the little rays coming up. And this is called, it's got... Well, it's not a uniform glow. It glows in, similar to a plasma ball, in something called spiracles. And these are basically 2,000 kilometer long. So the length of continental United States, if you want, or whatever country you're in, if you imagine 2,000 kilometers. These are columns of hot plasma which go up and dance around beautifully. And you can actually see things which look for all the world like tornadoes occurring on the surface of the sun. And of course, underneath it is the photosphere. And that is going with closer to liquid processes going in there, and you can actually see waves in the sun in the photosphere, and these with this special filter, the red filter of the sun, you'll see this a slightly outer layer of the sun, and you can actually just see the tinge of the photosphere of the chromosphere in a eclipse. So as it's as the disk of the moon is going across, as it's just cut out the photosphere, you'll see a thin little red arc, and that red arc is in fact the chromosphere. Chromosphere means color. Now the heating up process then really gets going. So the chromosphere has got a density such that it doesn't heat up as well as it does when it goes into the next layer. Which is of the first layer we have to talk about is the transition zone. So this is where the heating starts up seriously, and it heats the gas up to millions of degrees. And you see gas gets multiply ionized, and the gas flies out. And surface of the sun then heats up to millions of degrees and radiates outwards. And that is the solar wind. And so that solar wind rushes out through space. So the atmosphere of the sun still hasn't finished. It's continuing to be burnt and pushed outside. But just in the very first 1,000 kilometers or so above the chromosphere, you have a very thin line. It's actually a boundary layer. It's not going to think this is a transition zone, I suppose they call it a zone. The temperature increases a lot, and the actual buzzing of the magnetic fields heat up the gas and create your solar wind. And this solar wind blows out into space. I'll talk a little bit about the important aspect of it. I've got an aircraft flying over the top. I have to apologise for that. It's going to be worse than the Blue Mountains in about 10 years' time when they open up an airport above us. But I'll be long dead by then. So what I was going to say is this is the solar wind. So let's go over it again. We've got the core, the radiation zone, in brackets, it's really not convection and solid. Then the convection zone, which the heat gets transported up and the magnetic fields start really playing along. You've got the boundary layer between that, which is the tachosphere. Then you have the photosphere, which is where the convection zone stops, finishes and reaches the light, can actually, it's finally escaped space, and it's, it doesn't have the, I suppose, the large magnetic fields, and it has little pools of convection, subconvection currents. I've forgotten what they're called, granulation. And above that, you've got the chromosphere. Chromosphere, then the transition zone, where it suddenly sticks on, and you have the remaining gas being still accelerated by this highly oscillating, if you imagine like a whip cracking. You know how you have a whip crap where the oscillation goes up, and you have something called Alphane waves, which actually push out. So I've read a few papers as people have got into that, and this generates the solar wind. Now, the solar wind is what actually hits comets and actually blows them away. So if it's like a wind, if you imagine blowing a candle and the smoke coming out, that's similar to a comet. It's the solar wind, and this is the thing that once is protected by our magnetic field. The magnetic field of our Earth shields us, and the solar wind goes into goes around us and creates a big tail of solar wind. Some of it gets trapped in the second layer of the Van Allen belt. So we have a belt, and so the light, the wind can get trapped and go in circle. It can actually be pushed down and hit the Earth in corona. So Australia Borealis, or the Borealis effect. There's two Borealis effects hitting either side. So we'll just go into that. So that's the radiation zone and the corona. So the corona, you can actually see in the eclipse, these are, it's just like a crown. It's very tenuous and very high in the X-ray, very strongly bright in the X-ray regime because it's accelerated so much. So if you like, this energy is not for free. It's light energy. It's going, rather than light energy, the sun is moving its magnetic fields, and it receives a resistance inside of it as it couples and pushes out the radiation, the extreme atmosphere. And this extreme atmosphere extends beyond Earth, beyond Mars, Saturn. It extends beyond all the planets and creates basically a shockwave in the intergalactic gas. And here's a little experiment you can do at home. You can actually get a plate, turn on your tap such as dripping, or not dripping, pouring at a uniform rate, and you'll see it will go down onto your plate and form a circle of reduced with the water rushing out from the centre, or reduced height, and then it will have a wall, a circular wall. So there's a circular wall, I think it's called the helopause. That's where the sun's solar radiation or solar wind is actually blowing a bubble of atmosphere in the intergalactic, or the galactic atmosphere. So we are in the galaxy's atmosphere. Our solar system's in the galaxy's atmosphere, and we planets are orbiting within the sun's very tenuous atmosphere. So these are a few things to know. Now, the important thing here is that this entire process, so we've got a process going on here. In a main sequence star, this is an important thing to know, it's very stable, and heat goes up to a certain point, and then we have an intense effect, an intense localized and tangled magnetic field which vibrates, which then burns down the atmosphere and pushes down the photosphere, down to the photosphere, through the chromosphere, to the photosphere, and exposes the sun. So if I was to increase this magnetic effect, I'd push down further in. And so the surface of the sun, yes, it is correlated to the heat of a sun is correlated to its size, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. The size, so something is larger, it's got a comparably larger sun has a comparatively large radiative zone and comparably a smaller convective zone, comparatively a more violent transition between the radiative zone and the convective zone, comparatively more intense localized magnetic field, comparatively a sooner onset of the transition zone, sooner onset of the chromosphere, and a deeper cutting in for the photosphere. So all suns can have all temperatures. You can just get the sun to have any surface temperature you like. You only have to cut in deeper and deeper. And so, if you like it, it's small suns are red because they're not peeled off. You get a slightly larger sun, it's peeled off more. And so the more, the greater the mass of the sun, the greater the peeling effect, the closer into the sun you actually see before it vaporizes its surface, and you can actually see inside it. So this gives you all the colors of the sun. And this is one of the major things I want to see. So if you look up in the sky at night, and you look up, Orion, Australia sees the Orion upside down, so it looks, but it's like the Big Dipper. You'll see Betelgeuse in there, not in the Big Dipper, but that's Betelgeuse actually is from the Arabic meaning armpit, or Antares Betelgeuse. These are suns where this effect has broken down. So there's no longer the strong transition zones, strong solar wind, and so the sun has filled up its heliosphere with gas, and it's just glowing. It's got like a huge photosphere, and these are red giants. But you can also see some more blue stars. I have to think of a blue star. I know a lot of white dwarfs. Again, that's another situation. Again, I'll tell you on another thing. But you've got all these different colours of stars, and indeed, a larger main sequence star will have a more intense, a larger radiative zone, or a larger solid section, and will have a more intense shear, creating greater magnetic fields, which peels down and cuts down into the sun, the star, causing it to be more blue or hotter. The hotter something is, the bluer it is. And so you get all the different colours in stars. So culturally, we've actually suckered ourselves into thinking that all stars are pretty much the same colour. And if you happen to have an infrared scope or a viewer and look up at the sky at night, and you will be blown away by the number of infrared stars, even near infrared stars, about the place. So there's all these stars here, and people, I suppose need to know the structure of something, the photosphere, and the fact that there are sunspots in the photosphere, but the chromosphere, which is the gassy, hot, gassy part of the sun, the emission lines of the sun, that's where all the action tornadoes, all this amazing stuff happens. Then you have the transition zone, which is really basically, if you'd like, a glass wall within which the sun occurs. And if it goes out beyond that transition zone, the plasma gets punished and heated up to millions of degrees, and it accelerates two ways. It accelerates, solar wind accelerates, I suppose, will accelerate into the sun, and some of the solar wind will accelerate out, and will accelerate way, way beyond the orbit of Neptune, and accelerate up until it starts to blow and push against the intergalactic gas and create the helipause. So, yeah, I just have a kookaburra coming and arriving here. So that really is my explanation of the sun. So let's go through it once more. The sun is about half a degree in our sky. It's 8 light minutes away, or roughly 400 times the distance from the moon, that multiplied by 400 times. It takes us roughly 360 days to orbit anti-clockwise around an anti-clockwise spinning sun, and we spin anti-clockwise again. So our solar day is actually 4 minutes longer than our space day, that is, seen from space, the time for you to rotate to the same degree angle, because we have to rotate a few more degrees there. Again, we are orbiting, it's everything spinning as a gyroscope, and we actually, that gyroscope maintains its position as we move in and around the galaxy for it. Sun has these various sections. Again, to see if you can tick it off or say it ahead of me. You've got the inner core with fusion. You've got above, that's all within, that's a special region within the radiative zone, which is really solid, it doesn't move. Then you've got the convective zone, the tachosphere between those two areas, which is really is not a zone, it's actually a feature, and that's where all the shear is. You can imagine huge, if you were there, huge currents, and so it's more, it's liquid dynamics, plasma dynamics, where the actual plasma is interacts with the magnetic field and forms these magnetic field lines, or lightning bolts, if you like. And these get tangled inside and start to vibrate and radiate energy. But before we get to the end of that, this layer above this, it then transitions into much the outer layer of the sun, which then travels into space. This is the photosphere, this area with the granules and sunspots on it. And on that, you can see the differential rotation of the underlying a convection zone. So you can see it's spinning more in the equator than in the poles. And then above that, you have the chromosphere, where the sun's temperature picks up again from 6,000 degrees. It picks up to 100,000 degrees, and at this, or no, at least 30,000 degrees. I'm just thinking of the spectral lines, this is not as intensely bright, but it is spectrally very pure, and you can actually see these these lines associated with the not absorption lines, emission lines. So it's like a glowing lamp, and it goes to about 2,000 degrees, and then it thins out sufficient such that another effect can take over. And this is the transition zone. This is like the zone where the sun finishes abruptly. And it doesn't finish abruptly because there's space out there or there's gravity pulling things down. It finishes because anything going above that thing both accelerates towards and away from the sun, and that acceleration creates that solar wind, which permeates right throughout our solar system, and that goes out, creating the comet tails creates, blows our it blows around the Earth, which has got a protective shield. Jupiter's got a huge magnetic field, and its magnetic field creates a tail, if you can imagine, almost a stationary comet tail going around Jupiter, and that's stretched from Jupiter all the way out to Saturn. So some of the gas, the solar wind, which is going around, goes to Saturn. Poor old Mars, its magnetic field got knocked out, so its dynamo got stuffed, so to speak. So it's got no magnetic field. It's got some fossilized magnetic field, and it's got no magnetic field to protect it. And so the solar wind has gone in, and it's actually blown away the atmosphere of Mars. So Mars has got just almost no atmosphere to speak of. You know, nothing much to talk about. And that's been blown away by the solar wind. Blowing into it. So in order to have the atmosphere, you had to have your magnetic field switched on to look after it. Going back at this process, this transition zone. So when I look at the sun, I see, my God, there's the transition zone. And when I look at stars up at night, I look at different colours of the stars, and the sort of the yellow, the oranges, the blues, and there are actually ultraviolet stars out there, and they have this large, and this process is varying, going on in abundance. And so all the stars, actually, all the main sequence stars, which are just burning helium in the middle age of their life, follow this curve and this process, this law appears as a color versus size line on something called the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram. So if we plot the color of the stars on the x-axis and the brightness of the star on the vertical axis, we'll see basically starts off as a line and then it kinks up, because if, as you can remember, our sun is beginning to sip the something called the CNO cycle. It's a carbon nitrogen oxygen cycle. It's sort of like an accelerated curve. So it's a curve which starts with from the red up to the our colors of sun at a certain gradient, and then moves up at a much greater gradient as more efficient fusion goes on. So it's the fusion increases, it's due to the size of the sun. It's due to a number of factors. The size of the sun, the energy actually pouring through the surface determines the transition zone. So people say this amazing thing that, oh, it's bigger, therefore it's hotter, therefore it's a certain colour. And so if you go through the plasma physics, there's this other layer of complexity there. So I hope this concludes finally my Peter Hill Explains. I'll get back in to help serve the dinner. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on doing science.